except a human, Lorne Pavan.
Maul sensed the truth of Monchar's words. This was good. All he had to do was kill the Nemoidian, then find the human and kill him, and then this dreary chore would be at an end. Where can I find the human now?
I don't know.
Maul's hand clenched again. Monchar choked, gasping once more for air. Maul released him. Where?
He's coming here to buy the holocron.
When?
Any time now.
Maul smiled. He had all the information he needed. Excellent. You have been most cooperative, Hath Monchar. Monchar looked up from his supine position. There was an instant of hope in his eyes, but it died when he read his fate in Maul's expression. Maul drew his lightsaber. Time to die, he said.
Wait!
The Nemoidian's voice was a bleat of fear.
I can pay you. Every credit the human gives me will be yours, please.
With his free hand, Darth Maul made a sharp upward gesture, and the Nemoidian was lifted like a puppet on strings. He hung, helpless, in the Force's grasp. Darth Maul lit one blade of the lightsaber and swung it laterally.
No!
Cutting off the Nemoidian's final wail, along with his head. He then released the lines of force that held the twitching body and watched it crumple. There was a Durasteel safe on the floor behind the body. Maul opened it with a careful swipe of his lightsaber. Ah, there was the holocron crystal of which Monchar had spoken. He extinguished his lightsaber, hung it on his belt, and bent to pick up the holocron. Before his fingers touched it, however, he sensed that he was not alone. "Don't move," came a voice from the door, even as he realized this. "You so much as breathe deep and I'll fry you where you stand." Maul glanced at the doorway. A tall human female in shell-spider silk armor stood there, aiming a pair of blasters at him. Maul realized that this was the same being he had sensed following him earlier. His lips twitched in annoyance. He tried a quick mental probe, but the bounty hunter, for surely that was what she was too sharp, her attention too focused, to fall for mind tricks. Maul considered his options. He would never reach his lightsaber fast enough, even as quick as he was. He might be able to dodge a single blast, maybe even two, but hemmed as he was in this small cubicle against a woman who could likely put a dozen bolts into the air from two semi-automatic blasters in half a second, he would have to have a distraction. Near his feet lay the Trandoshan's blaster. It would serve nicely. Using his control of the Force, Darth Maul gripped the weapon in a dark tentacle of energy and hurled it at the bounty hunter's face, hard. The woman was fast. She dodged the blaster, firing a bolt at it. She missed and recovered, but the distraction had served its purpose. Before the weapon had bounced off the wall and landed on the floor, Maul had the lightsaber in his grasp. He thumbed on both blades as a half dozen blaster bolts came his way in rapid succession. The Sith apprentice's hands were a blur as he let the dark side take him over completely, giving in to its power and allowing it to control and manipulate him. Blaster bolts struck the lightsaber's spinning blades and were deflected into the walls, ceiling, and floor. No time to land. The bounty hunter dropped her useless blasters and reached for one wrist, where she wore a rocket launcher. The fool, Maul thought grimly. If a rocket exploded in here, it would kill them both. There was no time to try to stop her. Maul slipped along the lines of the Force, moving at unnatural speed as he spun toward the nearest wall, a cheap plastic panel, twirling the lightsaber in a cutting pattern. The plastic shredded easily, and Maul ran through the wall, leapt over a chair in the next room, which, fortunately for its tenants, was deserted at the moment, and stabbed downward with one blade of his lightsaber, shearing a ragged oval in the floor. He dropped through the ceiling of the cubicle below, just as the rocket struck the wall of the Nemoidian's room and exploded. Lin had never seen anybody move like the man with the horned and tattooed head. He wasn't dressed like a Jedi, but his expertise with the double-bladed lightsaber far exceeded the skill of any Jedi Lin had ever heard of. He knocked blaster bolts away as if swatting flies. And if he could do that, Lin couldn't stop him. He would use that double-bladed lightsaber to slice her apart. Desperate, she reached for her wrist launcher. Her only chance was to hit the horned one squarely and hope that the explosion would be contained enough by the other's body to allow Lin to survive. But as she triggered the launcher, the tattooed man seemed to disappear in a blur. All of a sudden, there was a hole in the wall where an instant ago it had been solid. Too late, Lin tried to stop the rocket from firing, but the reactionless motor flared and the missile leapt from her wrist. She tried to jump back into the hallway. Lorne was almost to the room where he was supposed to meet the Nemoidian when a sudden explosion hurled him backwards a good 3 meters, impacting against the wall of a T-intersection. As the shockwave lifted him, he caught a glimpse of what looked like an armored human flying across the hall just ahead of him and smashing halfway through the wall. Then he hit the far wall himself and didn't think about anything for a time. He was out for only a minute or two. When the corridor swam back into focus, the smoke was still swirling and debris was still settling. There was a ringing in his ears that was a result of either the blast or the dozens of residential alarms activated by it, or both. Lorne managed to get to his feet, pulled his blaster, and edged unsteadily forward. All he could see of the body was a pair of legs, unmistakably female, sticking out of a hole in the wall. So thinking of her as dead seemed a pretty safe bet. He turned and peered into the blackened cube. What looked like the remains of 4 bodies lay scorched and smoking on the floor. He took a few steps into the chamber. One of the smoldering corpses looked like Mon Char, but it was hard to be sure, given that it was headless. Lorne felt his guts churn, both at what he saw and what it meant. Hath Mon Char wouldn't be making any more deals with anybody. He was quite seriously dead. And Lorne and I-5 might as well be too if they didn't get off Coruscant in the next hour or so. The whole bank fraud escapade had been for nothing. Damn! Lorne turned to run. Even in this sector, an explosion like the one that had just happened would bring the security forces in to investigate. He had to get out of there, and fast. But as he started to move, he noticed a glimmer of light in a corner of the room and reflexively glanced at it. What he saw brought him skidding to a stop. Could it be? It seemed too much to hope for. But when he bent down and looked closer, he realized that maybe the game wasn't over yet. The holocron crystal lay in the half-open safe, which had no doubt protected it from being destroyed by the explosion. Lorne grabbed it up, holding it tightly in one hand and the blaster in the other, and now he did run, as fast as he could, down the corridor, past the confused and frightened faces of tenants who had cautiously emerged to investigate, and toward the stairwell. There was still a chance, a very slim chance, that he and I-5 could yet turn this fiasco into a winning situation. But doing so meant getting far away from here as fast as possible. The building Darsha had entered was a monad, a kilometer-high, totally self-contained habitat. More than just an apartment complex, the huge structure, like countless others sprouting from the surface of Coruscant, contained virtually everything its tenants needed, living quarters, shops, hydroponic gardens, and even indoor parks. Many people she knew literally lived their entire lives in buildings like these, in some cases holocommuting to offices halfway around the planet without ever venturing outside. She had never understood the attraction of such a life before. Now, however, she found herself in sympathy with such people in at least one respect. She had no desire to leave the building either. But her reluctance did not rise out of nascent agoraphobia. Rather, it stemmed from the fact that to leave meant returning to the Jedi Temple, where she would have to face the Council and admit her failure. However, there was no other alternative. The council had to know of the Fondorian's death, and quickly. It was her duty to report her failure, no matter how shameful it was. When Darsha emerged from the building, she was in a much more familiar world. She made her way to an air taxi stand, aware of the stares that her torn clothing and bandaged wounds drew. "Truly, I am still trapped between worlds," she thought. Just enough credit was left on her emergency tab to hire an air taxi that would take her back to the temple. As Darsha settled into the vehicle's back seat, she felt suddenly overcome by lassitude. It was all she could do not to fall asleep as the taxi made its short journey. She recognized the drowsiness as not so much a reaction to the trials she had just undergone as an attempt to escape what lay ahead. All too soon, the commute was over. Darsha paid the driver and entered the temple. She shook her head and squared her shoulders. Might as well get it over with. At this time of day, she would most likely find Master Bondara in his quarters. She would report to her mentor first. Then, in all likelihood, they would both go to the council. Darth Maul had made an error. The enormity of that knowledge weighed upon him like a giant planetoid. He had underestimated the bounty hunter because the woman had not been strong in the Force. Such a mistake had almost cost him his life. And how ignominious would that have been, to die at the hands of a common bounty hunter, he who had been trained to fight and slay Jedi? He could not make such dangerous assumptions. He would not make them again. He knew what his next move had to be. Hath Monchar was dead, but there was still the human to deal with. As Maul emerged from the building, the police and firefighting droids were already starting to arrive. He found a deserted blind alley a few blocks away and activated his wrist comm. A moment later, the image of Darth Sidious appeared before him.
"Tell me what progress you have made," Sidious said.
"The Turge of Isata Hath Monchar has been killed. He has shared his knowledge with one other, a human named Lorne Parvan. I know where the human lives. I go now to find him and kill him."
"Excellent. Do so as quickly as possible. You are certain that no one else knows of this?"
"Yes, Master, I..." Maul stopped suddenly in shocked realization. The holocron. As always, Sidious immediately knew that something was wrong.
"What is it?"
the Sith Lord demanded. Darth Maul knew he would have to admit failure. He did not hesitate. The concept of lying to his master never even occurred to him. "Monchar possessed a holocron that he said contains the information. I had an opportunity to acquire it, but I failed to do so." Maul saw Darth Sidious's eyes narrow in disapproval.
"You disappoint me, Lord Maul."
He felt that censure spear him like an icy shaft. No trace of it showed on his face. "I am sorry, my master."
"Your tasks are now twofold. Destroy this Lorne Parvan and find the crystal."
"Yes, my master." Sidious regarded Maul steadily for a moment.
"Do not fail me again."
The hologram vanished. Darth Maul stood silently for a moment in the perennial darkness of the city's surface. His breathing was steady and even, his body motionless. Only one trained to sense the walls and verticals of the Force would get a sense of the dark storm that raged within him. His master had rebuked him, and rightly so. That crystal could be the ruination of all Darth Sidious's carefully laid plans, and he, Darth Maul, heir to the Sith, had left it behind when he had fled for his life. Fool! Maul's nostrils flared as he drew in a deep, shuddering breath. There was, of course, the possibility that it had been destroyed in the explosion, but he couldn't count on that. He would have to go back and find out what had happened to it, even if every police droid on Coruscant was packed into that tiny room. And after he had found the holocron and disposed of the human, then he would have to face whatever punishment Darth Sidious would undoubtedly devise for his lamentable failure. Maul strode out of the alley and back toward the domicile. Lorne found I-5 just venturing into the first floor of the building, or trying to, as the stampede of panicked tenants had filled all the exits. Though the droid's metallic face was expressionless as always, he still somehow managed to project concern, followed by relief as he saw Lorne. "Let's get out of here," Lorne muttered to the droid. "Fast."
"That sounds like a remarkably astute idea."
Walking quickly, they soon put several city blocks between themselves and the debacle. Then I-5 said,
"It appears that all did not go entirely according to plan."
Ever a master of the understatement, Lorne explained what had happened. "I have no idea who the dead woman was. I have no idea what caused the explosion. I have no idea who killed the Nemoidian and his goons. What I do have is this." He pulled the holocron from a pocket. I-5 took it and looked closely at it.
"It appears to be encoded. It definitely contains some sort of information, whether it's the details of the trade embargo of Naboo or a recipe for Alderaan stew is impossible to tell without activating it."
"It better well be what Monchar said it is." Lorne glanced at his wrist chrono. "We've got barely enough time to make the meeting with the hut and then get to the spaceport." He stopped abruptly, paralyzed by shock. I-5 looked at his face, then quickly dragged him out of the stream of foot traffic.
"What is it?"
"No blood," Lorne said. I-5 said nothing. He waited. "Whoever did Monchar cut off his head. But there was no blood to speak of. You understand? No blood. That means
cauterization. Fusion of the tissues by sudden intense heat."
I-5 paused, and Lorne knew the droid had reached the same conclusion that he had.
"A lightsaber."
I-5 glanced about as if to assure himself that no one was listening.
"Are you saying a Jedi killed Monchar?"
"Much as I hate to admit it, executions aren't their style." Lorne's mouth was suddenly very dry. He had to swallow several times before he could continue. "Which leaves only one other logical choice."
"The Sith? Impossible! The last one died over 1,000 years ago.
"That's what everyone believes. But it's the only conclusion that makes any sense. The Jedi have kept the details of lightsaber manufacture secret for millennia. To create and use one, you have to be adept in the Force. And the Sith were the only other order of Force-sensitives the galaxy has ever known."
"And why couldn't it just as easily be a rogue Jedi? One who has succumbed to some kind of psychosis? A failing organic beings are prone to, I've noticed. I think you're jumping to conclusions,"
I-5 said. "No, I'm not." Lorne grabbed the droid and pulled him along as he started to walk faster. "I'm getting off this overbuilt rock, and so are you." He spied a public trash disintegrator across the street and changed course, with I-5 still in tow. "And we're getting rid of this holocron right now." They stopped before the disintegrator receptacle. Lorne pulled the information crystal from a pocket, but before he could throw it in, I-5 grabbed his arm.
"Now I know you're crazy," the droid said. "That holocron is our only chance to build a new life. We can't just..."
Lorne shoved the droid up against the graffiti-frescoed wall of a large hydro-reclamation processor. "Listen to me," Lorne said through clenched teeth. "If I'm right, there's a Sith out there. He's probably looking for this." He held up the holocron. "He can't be bought off, scared off, or thrown off the trail, and you'll stop at nothing to get it. I don't fancy having my neck cauterized."
"Let's say you're right," I-5 said. "Let's say Monchar's mysterious assassin is a Sith. Let's say he wants the crystal, and he knows we have it. Let's say he corners us before we reach the hut and demands we give it to him, which will make him happier with us, handing him the crystal, or telling him we destroyed it."
Lorne paused, trying to quell his panic. He had to admit that I-5's argument had a certain logic. Still, there wasn't a whole lot of choice. They could keep the holocron and stay on Coruscant in the hope that giving it up would dissuade Monchar's murderer from beheading them as well, or they could sell it and use the credits to flee and hope they were not pursued. Neither alternative seemed to offer much in the way of living to a ripe old age. Lorne sighed and released the droid. "All right," he said. "Let's go meet the hut." Master Anun Bandara sat in silence for several minutes after Darsha finished her report. They were, quite possibly, the longest minutes of the Padawan's life. The Twi'lek Jedi sat with head bowed and fingers steepled, looking at the floor between them. There was no way to read his body language to tell what he was thinking. Even his leku were motionless. But Darsha had a pretty good idea that whatever her mentor's thoughts were, they did not bode well for her continued career as a Jedi. At last, Master Bandara sighed and raised his gaze to meet Darsha's.
"I am glad you are still alive," he said, and Darsha felt a surge of gratitude and love for her mentor that was almost overwhelming in its intensity. Her safety had been more important to Master Bandara than the mission. "Now tell me," the Twi'lek continued, "did you see the Fundorian die?"
"No, but there was no way he could have survived such a fall."
Master Bandara held up a hand to stop her.
"You did not see him die, and I assume you did not feel any upheaval in the Force that could have meant his death?"
"I did not," she said slowly, then felt compelled to add, "but given the circumstances..."
"The circumstances were hardly optimal, I'm sure," Master Bandara said. "But as long as the slightest chance exists that Ulf is still alive, we must pursue it. The information he had is that important."
"You want me to go back and verify his death?" The thought of returning to the Crimson Corridor was enough to make her dizzy with revulsion. Nevertheless, if that was what had to be done, she would do it. Master Bandara stood, his attitude and posture decisive.
"We shall go together. Come."
He strode toward the door of his quarters, and Darsha hastened to follow.
"But what about the Council? Should we not tell them?"
The Jedi stopped before reaching the door and looked back at the Padawan.
"Tell them what? There is nothing definitive to report as yet. Once we know for certain whether the Fundorian is alive or dead, then shall we make our report."
He turned back to the panel, which slid open before him, and started down the corridor. Darsha followed, only gradually beginning to realize that there might be a chance, however infinitesimal, that her mission had not ended in failure. Maul kept his cowl up and his lightsaber clipped as he re-entered the building. Fortunately, there was a human officer at the checkpoint, asking those coming and going to state their business. It was ridiculously easy for Maul to cloak himself in the Force, and thus slip by the dim-witted fellow. The forensics droids were laser-scanning the cubicle when he arrived. There were a couple of criminologists, one Merlissi and one Celestin as well. He stayed in the hallway and listened to what scraps of conversation he could. He heard no mention of a holocron being found. Carefully he probed and prodded first the Melissi's mind, then the Sullustan's, and detected nothing about the crystal in their thoughts. Still cloaked in the dark side, he stole past the entrance of the cubicle, glancing at the open safe as he did so. The holocron was not there. Maul pondered the possibilities. If it was gone, then someone other than the security forces must have taken it, and who might that have been? Obviously, the Bayer Monchar had been expecting momentarily the human known as Lorne Pavan. He was going to enjoy taking that one's head. Darth Maul turned and headed for the exit. Now he had a double incentive to find the human and his droid. The first place to check, of course, would be their pathetic subterranean cubicle. It was not far from here, only a few minutes' walk.
which, with any luck, would be the same few minutes Pavan had left of his life. On the whole, Lorne did not consider himself to be overly xenophobic. After all, given the way he had been making his living for the last half-decade, to be prejudiced against other species was not only bad for business, it could be downright dangerous. But he hated dealing with huts. On a purely physical level, everything about the giant invertebrates repulsed him. Their huge reptilian eyes, their slithering method of locomotion, and most of all, their slimy mucosal skin. Just having to be in a room with Yanth sent a wave of horripilation over him that he was hard put to quell. Yanth was young, as huts go, less than 500 standard years old. Even so, he was smart and cagey, and working his way up through the underworld ranks rapidly. Now he reclined on a dais in his subterranean headquarters, desultorily puffing on a glitterstim hookah while he examined the holocron crystal. A couple of Gamorrean bodyguards stood nearby, watching Lorne and I-5.
"Why did you not go directly to the Jedi with this?"
he asked Lorne, his rumbling basso profundo setting off unpleasant vibrations in the human's gut.
"That would seem the logical ones to approach."
Lorne saw no reason to elaborate on his own personal distaste for the Jedi to Yanth. "They claim to have very little discretionary funds for this sort of thing," he said. "Besides, I wouldn't put it past them to use their mind tricks to force me into handing it over for free." He glanced surreptitiously at his chrono and said, "So, are you interested or not? I can always take it directly to the Naboo representative here on Coruscant." Yanth waved a pudgy hand in a placating gesture.
"Patience, my friend. Yes, I am interested. But, and please don't take this as a reflection on you, I would be a fool not to test its authenticity before handing you a stack of credits."
Lorne kept his face carefully expressionless. If Yanth suspected the time crunch they were in, the hut would have no compunctions about using it as leverage to gouge a cheaper price. On the other hand, time was most definitely running out. "And just how do you plan on doing that?" he asked the hut. Yanth simply smiled and slid several facets of the crystal aside at various angles, manipulating it much as one might a child's geometric puzzle. After a moment, a beam projected from the holocron's uppermost surface, resolving into a mid-air display of glowing words and images that slowly curtained up the length of the holographic frame before vanishing. Lorne was too far away to read the text. Not only that, but he was behind the display, so that the words and alphanumerics appeared reversed to him. The text seemed to be in Basic, however, and the images looked like schematics for Naboo N1 starfighters and Trade Federation ships. Yanth rotated a facet, and the images cut off.
"Excellent," I-5 said. "Now you know the article is genuine. We are asking 1,000,000 credits.
"Done,"
Yanth replied, much to Lorne's surprise.
"It is worth 10 times that."
The hut turned to a control console near at hand and pressed a button. Lorne permitted himself another glance at his timepiece. They could still reach the spaceport if everything continued to proceed smoothly. In another hour, Coruscant, the mysterious Sith killer, and the police would be vanishing into the void behind them. Darth Maul neatly and quickly excised the lock on the underground cubicle with one blade of his lightsaber, as he had earlier at Hath Monchar's building. He stepped inside quickly, letting the door slide closed behind him. Harsh glow lamps flickered on automatically, illuminating a living space even smaller and tawdrier than the one the Nemoidian had rented. It was the work of only a few seconds to determine that the compartment was empty. Maul stepped to a section of wall that held a vidscreen and message unit. He activated the latter. An image formed in midair, the image of a hut. He recognized the creature. Yanth, an up-and-coming gangster in the Black Sun organization, one of the few who had survived the slaughter Maul had recently unleashed.
The hut's image spoke.
Lorne, I thought we were going to meet sometime today to discuss a certain holocron you wished me to look at. It's not polite to keep buyers waiting, you know.
Maul turned and strode out of the cubicle, moving quickly. All too soon, Dasha Asant found herself back in the underbelly of Coruscant. When she had escaped the area earlier that day, she had estimated that by now she would have been stripped of her rank and reassigned to the Agricultural Corps. And yet, here she was, seated beside Anun Bandara in the latter's four-person skycar, headed back toward the Crimson Corridor and the monad where she had lost the Fondorian and nearly lost her life as well. The ways of the Force were nothing if not unpredictable. "That's the one," she said, pointing toward the tower that rose up ahead, stark against the afternoon sun. "Down there." Master Bandara said nothing as he angled the skycar out of the flow of traffic. They slipped into a vertical descent lane and began dropping. The mist that seemed always present around the 100-meter mark, demarcating the thriving upper levels from the slums below, wrapped around them momentarily, and then faded away, to be replaced with an aerial view of the dark streets. Though it was still daylight above, down here it was at best a dim perpetual twilight. When they were 10 meters above the pavement, Master Bandara turned on the landing lights. Darsha, looking over the side, could see shadowy figures, long conditioned to prefer darkness to light, scuttling away. There was no sign of the Fondorian. In all probability, his body had been dragged away by scavengers. There was, however, a smear of purplish blood on the pavement, and nearby, the body of a hawk bat, its neck broken in the fall. Master Bandara trained one of the lights on that and looked at it. His leku slumped slightly, along with his shoulders. And watching him, Darsha realized that her last hope of salvaging the mission was finally, irrevocably, dead. "What shall we do now?" she asked him softly. He was silent for a long moment. Then he sighed and said, "Return to the temple. We must report what has happened to the council." So there it was, she thought. Oddly enough, now that she knew hope was dead, she did not feel the crushing sorrow that she had anticipated. Instead, she felt a surprising sense of relief. The worst had happened, and now she would find a way to deal with it. Lorne watched as one of the hut's flunkies delivered a large case to his master. Yanth opened it, and Lorne grew dizzy at the sight. It was filled with crisp Republic credit standards in 1,000-denomination notes. Yanth turned the case toward him, displaying the wealth, and Lorne could feel his fingers twitching with the desire to take possession of it. He hadn't seen that much hard cash in... He had never seen that much cash in one place before.
1,000,000 non-sequential Republic credits,
Yanth said, as casually as if he was discussing the weather.
You take them, I keep this.
He held up the holocron.
Everybody's happy.
Lorne watched, still hardly able to believe this was happening, as I-5 stepped forward to take possession of the money that would transform their lives. He glanced at his chrono, just enough time to get to the spaceport if they left now. I-5 was reaching for the case when the door behind them suddenly flew open. A Chevin bodyguard staggered backwards into Yanth's sanctum, a force pike dropping from his nerveless fingers. It clattered across the floor to the foot of the dais. The leathery-skinned being looked down at his chest, in the middle of which was a smoking hole, and then collapsed. Through the door stepped a nightmare. Lorne stared in shock at the apparition. The Chevin's killer was almost 2 meters tall and dressed entirely in black, including hooded cloak, boots, and heavy gauntlets. He carried a lightsaber unlike any Lorne had ever seen. It boasted not one, but 2 energy blades, emanating from either end of the hilt. The killer pulled back his hood, revealing a countenance that was a sinister variegation of red and black tattoos around gleaming yellow eyes and blackened teeth. From the bald scalp sprouted 10 short horns, like a demonic crown. He stared balefully at the others in the room, then spoke in a guttural voice.
None shall survive.
Vaughn was completely frozen to the spot, unable to offer any resistance, as the killer stepped toward him. His eyes shone like twin suns as he raised the lightsaber. I-5 grabbed the case full of money from Yanth and hurled it between Lorne and his attacker, just as the latter swung the lightsaber in a flat arc that would have separated the Corellian's head from his neck. The case intercepted the blade's swing. The plasmatic edge sliced through the case, scattering burning credits everywhere. The force of the blow was so strong that it probably would still have decapitated Lorne, but its momentum was slowed just enough to give the droid time to dive forward, knocking his friend out of harm's way. Lorne felt the heat as the blade's incandescent tip seared through his hair. The Sith! For there was no doubt in Lorne's mind that he was facing one of those legendary Dark Lords out of the mists of the past, recovered almost instantly, and swung around to attack again. But by this time, both Gamorrean guards had pulled their blasters and were firing. The Sith spun the double-bladed weapon before him, deflecting the blaster fire back at the guards. That was all Lorne had time to see before I-5 yanked him to his feet and pulled him through the doorway. They fled down the narrow corridor that led from Yanth's sanctum, passing several more dead guards and two piles of melted, twisted metal that had once been droids. Yanth's headquarters was beneath a nightclub he owned called the Tuscan Oasis. Lorne and I-5 stumbled up a short flight of stairs and burst out into a blue-lit chamber full of sabacc tables, Dajaric game boards, and scantily clad females of various species dancing on pedestals. They hurtled through the room and out the entrance. "Where are we going?" Lorne shouted as they ran down the street. "Away from there!" I-5 shouted back. Lorne wanted to protest that it wouldn't make any difference. He had looked into the eyes of the Sith, and he had seen his doom there, as plainly as the tattooed walls that surrounded those eyes, an implacable fate that would hunt him down no matter how far and how fast he ran. But he had no breath in him to speak, no breath left for running, either. But the fear of what he had seen in those eyes kept him running anyway. Despite his bulk, Yanth could move quickly when he had to. He slithered off the dais and grabbed up the force pike dropped by the Chevin. He hurled it at Maul, who slashed it in two with a sweep of his own weapon. The generator in the pike shaft shorted out in a shower of sparks. Yanth had not waited to see the results of his attack. His massive bulk moved rapidly, slithering through the singed and blackened credit notes that littered the floor, the holocron crystal still clutched in one hand. He had almost reached the exit when Maul leapt, executing a twisting forward flip that covered the length of the large chamber and deposited him directly in front of the hut. Before Yanth could recover from his surprise, Darth Maul plunged one of the lightsaber's blades deep into the hut's chest. A stench of burning flesh and blubber filled the room. Yanth died with a croaking gurgle, the gelid mass of his body sagging bonelessly to the floor. Maul deactivated both blades. He reached out with his free hand, and the holocron leapt from the dead hut's grasp into his own. Stuffing it into a belt compartment, he turned and ran from the room. At the top of the stairs, he plunged recklessly through the gambling chamber, hurling guests and workers aside with savage, force-laden gestures. He reached the street and paused, looking first one way, then another, for his prey. Pavan and the droid were not in sight. Maul gritted his teeth. They would not be permitted to slip away again. One way or another, he was determined to end this chore. It had already gone on far too long. He sought the dark side once more, bade it illuminate the path his quarry had taken. His speeder bike was parked not far away. He could activate the slave circuit by remote control and have it here within a few minutes at most.
But there was an even quicker way to overtake them. He called upon the Force, moving easily 5 times faster than a human could travel at a dead run. There was no way they could escape him now. Within moments he was in sight of his quarry. Another few seconds and he would catch up to them. And then the lightsaber would do its work once more, slashing through metal and flesh, and at last bringing this dreary task to an end. He grinned and lengthened his gargantuan stride even further, sailing over the fire-blackened husk of a parked landspeeder. Pavan and the droid looked back and saw him coming. He could see the fear in the human's face. It was most satisfying to witness. One more leap, and both of them would be his. And then an invisible hammer struck him in mid-leap, pounding him to the ground. What was this? Who dared to interfere? Maul looked up, saw a sky car settling to the ground alongside Pavan and the droid. The repulsor beams from its undercarriage had struck him down when the vehicle passed directly over him. The sky car was less than 5 meters away. He could see the driver and his passenger clearly. They were Jedi. Darsha had sensed the disturbance in the Force at the same time as Master Bondara. They had almost reached the cloud level when they felt the dark vibrations from below. They stared at each other simultaneously in shock, and then the Twi'lek put the sky car in a steep dive back down toward the street. Neither spoke. Darsha wasn't sure how the blast of hatred and destruction reverberating from below had affected her mentor, but she had been left shaken and nauseated by the intensity of the empathic burst. Master Bondara leveled off at 20 meters above street level, moving as fast as was prudent through the urban maze. The sky car's headlights illuminated the narrow thoroughfare, and as they rounded a corner, they saw, perhaps 100 meters ahead, the one who had to be responsible for the pulsation they had felt. A tall biped in dark robes, covering ground in a series of gigantic strides that had to be Force-assisted. Who, or what, could he be? Not a Jedi, that much was certain. He wielded the Force with the surety of a master, but no Jedi ever gave off such darksome emanations. There was only one explanation. But even as the thought occurred to her, Darsha felt her mind flinching away from it. It couldn't be. It was impossible. She had no time to wonder about it. Up ahead they could see the two who were the Dark One's targets. That much was obvious from their terror-stricken flight. The Dark One would reach his prey in one more gargantuan leap. Darsha could think of only one way to stop him, and it was evident from the direction in which Master Bondara was taking the sky car that he had thought of the same tactic. The sky car passed right over the robed figure at a height carefully calculated to deliver a force from the repulsors sufficient to stun but not kill. It worked. As the vehicle lurched and moved on, Darsha looked behind them and saw the mysterious assailant lying in the street, the fuliginous robes a darker blot against the general darkness. Then Master Bondara brought the sky car to a stop near the two fugitives. Darsha noted with surprise that one of them was a droid. "Get in," Master Bondara said to the human. "He's unconscious, but I don't know how long he'll be." "Not long," the droid said and pointed back toward the pursuer. Darsha glanced back and saw to her astonishment that the Dark One was already rising to his feet. She could scarcely believe he had recovered from the repulsor's hammering so fast. "Get in," Master Bondara shouted. "Now!" The human, who had been staring at Darsha and her mentor with a strange expression, mingled relief and revulsion, seemed to wisely decide that they were by far the lesser of two evils. He vaulted into the sky car's back seat, followed by the droid. Darsha cast another glance behind her and saw the Dark One leaping toward them. This close she could see his face, and a more fearsome visage she could not recall ever having encountered. Then her neck was jerked painfully as Master Bondara hit the ascent control and the sky car rocketed upward. But not swiftly enough.
The vehicle shuddered from a blow delivered to the stern undercarriage and then lurched to one side. As Master Bandara fought the controls, Darsha saw a black-gloved hand catch the cockpit's rear gunwale. He must have used the force to help him jump, she thought, as the skycar was already a good 10 meters off the ground. Even as the thought went through her mind, she thrust out both hands in a pushing gesture, hurling an invisible but nonetheless powerful blow concentrated at that hand. It lost its grip, and the craft jerked again as the Dark One fell back to the street. "Let's get back up levels," she shouted. But even as the words left her, she saw the look on Master Bandara's face.
"We can't," he said.
Darth Maul's fury at seeing Pavan and his droid snatched from his clutches yet again was almost mitigated by the realization that the Jedi had entered the picture. Finally, a foe that might be worthy of his attention, someone who could truly test his mettle. Even before his boots touched the ground, he had his wristcom activated and was speaking into it the code command that would activate his speeder bike and bring it homing in on his signal. As he did this, he watched the skycar stabilize and then shoot forward. In the space of a second, it had rounded a corner and disappeared from view. No matter, he told himself as he awaited the speeder bike's arrival. The skycar would be easy enough to track via the Force, especially with the Jedi on board. Pavan and his droid had had more than their share of luck this day, but now their luck had most definitely run out. The vertical adjustment on the repulsor array has been damaged, the Jedi piloting the craft said.
What does that mean?
The woman asked. She was younger than her companion, younger than Lorne, too.
It means,
I-5 said before the Jedi could answer,
that while we can move laterally and descend, we can't rise above this level.
Lorne glanced over the side. It was hard to estimate their altitude in the pervasive gloom, but it looked to him that they were about 20 meters above the street. The skycar was moving at a fast clip. There was little air traffic at this level, which was fortunate given the limited room for maneuverability granted by the narrow, twisting streets. He looked at the Jedi. He was a Twi'lek who appeared to be in his mid to late 40s. Lorne could not recall having seen him around the temple. Of course, that meant nothing. There were plenty of Jedi with whom he had had little or no contact. The irony of it all would have made him laugh, if it wasn't still so blasted terrifying. To be rescued from the deadly grasp of a Sith by a Jedi. Still, he had to admit it was providential that they had come along when they did. Since it looked like he and I-5 wouldn't be heading off-world anytime soon, the Jedi Temple was probably the safest place for them now, though it galled him to admit that, even to himself. Darth Maul leapt onto the speeder bike as it flashed past him. He wrapped both hands around the acceleration grips on the handlebar and opened them up. The repulsor engine's hum climbed as the speeder shot forward. Maul leaned into the turns as the speeder zoomed around corners. There was no need to activate the heads-up tracking display. The Jedi and his quarry gleamed like twin beacons in his mind. He could feel them in the skycar ahead of him. The speeder bike was moving at half again their speed. He would overtake them in mere minutes. Maul grinned savagely. It would be the work of a moment to dispose of Pavan and the droid. Then he would see just how good the Jedi were. It had been far too long since he had felt his lightsaber clash against another.
"Why is the Sith after you?"
Master Bandara shouted over the slipstream's howl. Though Darsha had come to the same conclusion, it was still shocking on a very deep level to hear Master Bandara articulate her thoughts. She saw the human and the droid look at each other, and realized they had come to a silent agreement about something. Then the droid spoke.
"We are information brokers. I am known as I-5, and my associate is Lorne Pavan."
Darsha saw Master Bandara glance quickly at Pavan, and then return his attention to piloting.
"He knows the name," she thought.
The droid continued.
We were recently contacted by a Nemoidian named Hath Monchar, who wished to sell us a holocron containing details of a trade embargo to be imposed on the planet Naboo by the Trade Federation. Master Bandara said nothing in reply for a moment. Then he asked, "Is this in retaliation for the new tax recently imposed by the Republic Senate on the Trade Federation?"
"Yes," Pavan replied. "The Federation fears the new tax will cut into their profits."
"Naboo is highly dependent on imports to maintain its way of life," Master Bandara said. "Such sanctions could prove devastating to its people."
He steered the skycar around another corner. Pedestrians scattered left and right.
"That doesn't explain why the Sith is trying to kill you," Master Bandara continued.
Darsha admired the Jedi's equanimity. He might have been having this conversation in one of the quiet, comfortable reading chambers of the temple, instead of in a damaged skycar traveling a dangerous route at maximum velocity.
"You can see why the Nemoidians don't want this information to get out,"
I-5 said.
"We're not sure why or how the Sith are involved, but Hath Monchar was killed by the one who's now pursuing us."
"What happened to the holocron?" Darsha asked. "We were in the process of selling it to the hut named Yanth," Pavan replied, "when the Sith broke in. My guess is that the hut is dead, and the Sith either destroyed the crystal or has it with him."
"This information must be brought to the Council immediately," Master Bandara said. "You two will be kept safe until the threat of the Sith has been dealt with."
Darsha glanced at Lorne Pavan and saw mingled frustration and resignation in his expression.
"Jedi," he muttered to himself. "Why did it have to be Jedi?"
Darsha looked behind them, and she could plainly make out the shape of a speeder bike behind them.
"Here he comes. He's gaining fast."
She looked at Master Bandara and saw his jaw muscles clench in determination.
"Take the controls," he told her.
His order surprised her, but his tone of voice brooked no questioning. She slid over as Master Bandara pushed himself up and back, then swung his feet over the back of the padded crossbar separating the front and rear seats. She looked at the rear vidscreen and saw that the Sith was not more than 5 meters behind her. He drew his lightsaber, activating the twin crimson beams. "Get them back to the temple," Master Bandara shouted at her. Then before Darsha could even realize what he intended, much less protest or try to stop him, the Jedi stood up on the rear seat between Pavan and I-5. He activated his lightsaber, took 2 steps up onto the rear engine compartment, and leapt from the speeding skycar. His leap, guided by the Force, landed him squarely behind Maul on the rear engine housing of the T-shaped speeder. The action took Maul by surprise. He had not expected such a courageous, if foolhardy, deed. Unexpected as the move was, however, Maul was still able to block the slash of the other's lightsaber with his own energy blade. He quickly activated the speeder's autopilot, then twisted around in the saddle, thrusting his weapon at the Jedi's chest. The Jedi blocked the blow and countered with another. Maul knew the battle could not continue this way. The speeder bike's autopilot was not sophisticated enough to chart a safe course at high speed through the tortuous windings of the surface streets. He grabbed the handlebar and jerked the speeder toward a docking platform on a nearby building, about 30 meters above the street. They shot by the skycar, which had slowed after the Jedi left it, and rose toward the shelf. As the ledge came within range of the autopilot sensors, the speeder slowed, then settled down to a landing on the extruded slab of ferrocrete. The Sith and the Jedi leapt from the speeder bike onto the platform to continue their battle. Maul knew he had to dispatch the Jedi quickly, before Pavan once again vanished into the labyrinth of Coruscant's down levels. He pressed the attack viciously, blocking and thrusting, the twin radiant blades spinning a web of light and heat about him. Maul bared his teeth. He would not lose his quarry again. He doubled his efforts, pressing the attack hard, hammering away at the Twi'lek's defenses. The Jedi gave ground, but Maul was still unable to slash through his guard. Then he heard something. The distinctive sound of the Skycar's damaged engine.
He let his awareness expand on the ripples of the Force, and what he sensed brought a dark smile of satisfaction to his face. The Skycar, with his prey, was returning. Darsha could not believe it at first when Master Mandara leapt from the Skycar onto the Sith's speeder bike. Her first action was reflexive. She slowed the Skycar, intending to go to her mentor's aid. "What are you doing?" Pavan shouted. "He said head for the temple." "I'm not going to abandon him to that monster," Darsha shouted back. She saw the speeder bike shoot past them, then rise and head for a docking ledge that protruded from a dilapidated building. "He knows what he's doing," the droid told her. "Are you prepared to make his sacrifice meaningless?" Darsha knew the droid's words made sense, but she didn't care. After all, she had made one mistake after another in the past several hours. Why stop now? She slowed the Skycar and brought it around to a hovering stop below and to one side of the ledge. Above her, the two dueling figures were hidden by the ferrocrete slab, but she could see the variegated flashes and hear the angry buzzing and screeching of the lightsabers as they clashed. She had to take action now. She stood, pulled her lightsaber from its belt hook, and prepared to leap. And the world suddenly dissolved in a burst of blinding light and a deafening roar. Darth Maul had seen the grim realization in the eyes of his foe, the knowledge that the Twi'lek could not defeat his adversary. Once defeat was conceded in the mind, its reality was inevitable. It was only a matter of time. He pressed his attack to an even higher intensity, driving the Jedi back towards his speeder bike, intending to pin him between the dual-bladed lightsaber and the speeder. With his movements thus constricted, it would be mere moments before the Twi'lek's tentacled head was separated from his neck. But then he saw the desperation in the other's face suddenly give way to realization and then to triumph. Quickly, before Maul could intuit what was intended, the Jedi whirled toward the speeder bike, raised his lightsaber, and plunged it to the hilt into the speeder's repulsor drive housing. Maul realized his suicidal intention, but too late. The superheated energy blade melted with lightning swiftness through the housing and sank into the speeder's power cell core. Maul turned and leapt from the platform, reaching for the dark side, enfolding himself in it even as the power cell exploded, the heat and pressure wave vaporizing the Jedi in a microsecond and then expanding, reaching hungrily for him as well. The landing platform shielded the Skycar from the main force of the explosion, otherwise the three passengers would not have survived. Even so, the shockwave hurled Darsha from her standing position back over the rear of the craft. She would have plunged to the street below had Lorne not grabbed her wrist as she fell past him. I-5 lunged for the controls and fought to stabilize the vehicle, which was pitching and yawing wildly. For an instant that felt like an eternity, Darsha hung over the abyss, too stunned to use the Force to help lift herself to safety. And then Lorne managed to pull her back into the rear seat compartment. But the danger was not yet over. The explosion had caused the platform to break free of its supports. It began to collapse, sagging away from the building wall. As it did so, Darsha caught a glimpse of the Sith's dark form hurtling from the ledge into the darkness below. The buckling platform clipped the Skycar's side, sending it spinning out of control toward the street as well. I-5 fought with the controls and managed to level out as the vehicle reached the ground. The spectators, drawn to the scene by the explosion, scattered in panic as the Skycar pancaked to a rough landing. Darsha, half-stunned, was vaguely aware of an insistent beeping that was rising in frequency and tone. Even as realization of what the beeping signified penetrated her dazed brain, she felt herself seized in a powerful grip and pulled from the wrecked Skycar. As she stumbled across the litter-strewn pavement, she realized the droid was dragging her and Lorne Pavan away from the vehicle.
Hurry, she mumbled. Power cells on overload. A fact of which I am quite aware, I-5 replied. He stopped before a kiosk. A sign on the door read, Keep Out, in basic, but the droid ignored this and blasted the lock with a laser beam that shot from his left index finger. Within the kiosk was a narrow, dimly lit stairwell. The three of them hurried down it as, behind them, the alarm beeps reached a crescendo.